From DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans, presented by Marco's Pizza. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
I think if you're a Georgia fan, you've got to be really happy right now with how the Georgia quarterback competition is playing out between Jake Fromm and Justin Fields. I'm going to try to give you some examples of why I feel that way over the course of the next couple of minutes. And it's not just, as I've done before, in contrast to what I think is a pretty ugly situation in Alabama right now, where some good quarterbacks seemingly can't get along, or maybe in contrast to programs like Florida, which just may not have a good quarterback. So there's obviously that, you know, subtext to this, that in contrast to some of the other places in the SEC, the Georgia situation looks better. But even just sort of within the parameters here of Dog Nation, there is a lot to like about what's happening thus far from with Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, at least based on what Kirby Smart has had to say about this. And the catalyst for a lot of this is the scrimmage on Saturday. And my, oh my, wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall for what really happens during one of these sort of closed-door scrimmages? One of the things that I think serves as one of the great dress rehearsals for the start of the upcoming season. We're not there. We don't get a chance to see it. For many of us, we are sort of forced to allow Kirby Smart to interpret the day's events. And when it comes to his quarterbacks here, this is sort of a short, very to-the-point clip, but Kirby Smart seemingly has good things to say about both Jake Fromm and Justin Fields here. I think this sets us up nicely for a conversation today. Take a listen.
I thought both quarterbacks played well. They did some good things. They did some things in the passing game that helped us.
So listen, that's a short clip, but there's a lot to unpack there. In particular, I think there's one word there that gets used that's probably more important than any other, and that's the word both. And here's where I'm going with this, and I sort of brought this up to Chip Towers in the program yesterday. Kirby Smart has sort of proven himself over the course of time to be something of a self-aware coach. I think self-awareness is probably a pretty good trait for a coach to have. When Kirby Smart speaks publicly, in other words, he knows how his message is going to be received. Sometimes that message may be directed towards a player. He'll know that player will somehow hear about these words, and therefore Kirby Smart says publicly what he wants to reinforce that he said to his team privately. But there's also that opportunity to sort of sometimes sort of throw water on narratives that he doesn't want to get built up. I'll give you, for instance, here, go back to the beginning of summer when he mentioned that Terry Godwin was dealing with a bit of a minor knee injury. At the time, Smart said, now I know y'all are already tweeting about this right now. You're going to take this story and run, and what I'm telling you is it's a minor knee injury. And what Smart indicates when he says those kinds of things is that he is paying attention to what the dominant media narrative is. And in this case, I would think that he's also probably aware of what has been said about his, in this case, more important, the backup quarterback, Justin Fields. He knows that Fields is one of the most heralded and talked about recruits in modern Georgia football history. I'm not old enough to say, is he the most talked about UGA recruit of all time? I wasn't really around when Herschel Walker was coming to the program. But since I've been doing this stuff and paying close attention to this stuff for a number of years here, it's hard to imagine there have been too many recruits who have had more attention paid to them than Justin Fields. And there's already this sort of growing sense that Fields as a dynamic freshman may be every bit the equal of what Jake Fromm was as a freshman and what Jacob Eason kind of was and was supposed to be as a freshman going back to 2016. Kirby Smart has to be aware that narrative exists. And the fact that Kirby Smart doesn't really choose to throw water on that, I find to be kind of interesting. The fact that Kirby Smart doesn't try to take the myth and the legend of Justin Fields down a peg, I find that to be kind of interesting, saying that, hey, you know what? He did pretty well in the scrimmage. We're not there. We didn't see it. Kirby Smart's got every opportunity to say, listen, y'all want to anoint this freshman quarterback the next, you know, Steve Young or whatever you want to call him. I'm telling you, he's not quite there yet. Kirby Smart could say that, whether it was true or not. We'd never know. We weren't at the scrimmage. But he throws a compliment Justin Fields' way, and I find that, at least reading between the lines here, to be somewhat significant. Now, let me go a little deeper on exactly what Fromm and what Kirby Smart had to say about both Fromm and Fields. And once again, if you're a Georgia fan, I sort of find this to be good news. Here's a little bit more of Kirby evaluating the scrimmage from his two quarterbacks.
Talking creates toughness. So if you can talk to your offensive line, your backs, receivers, command of the huddle, command of the offense, decision making, you know, when you're in the red area, are you secure with the ball? We got points. Are we going to make sure we get a field goal? Or are we going to take a risk and take a chance on losing it? Are you securing the ball in the pocket? What's your turnover to touchdown ratio? I mean, all the things involved are going to go into those things. And both those guys did a good job with the command of their huddle today. I thought both of them have really good presence in the, I won't say huddle because we're not always huddling, but they have good command of the offense.
once again, kind of a lot to unpack there. And even though Kirby Smart is technically talking about both quarterbacks, that for me still feels like more about Justin Fields than it is about Jake Fromm. Because, A, we already know that Jake Fromm can do the things that Kirby Smart's talking about there, creating the kind of level of communication the good quarterback needs, handling the football, making good decisions on the football field. Jake Fromm was doing that stuff a year ago. So it's not a surprise to me that he's doing it here moving into a sophomore season of 2018. This is something we already know about Jake Fromm. But to hear Kirby Smart put Justin Fields in the same sentence in terms of the cerebral aspects of being a quarterback, to me it just really does speak to what I think we all sort of believe to be true now, which is that Justin Fields is good enough to play. And Justin Fields is likely going to be playing some for Georgia this season. Because as we said a lot during the offseason, you go back and watch some of those highlights from Fields back in Harrison High School, and you see a guy who's the kind of athletic specimen that most coaches only dream about. The way he runs, the way he throws, the way he kind of does all the athletic stuff associated with being a quarterback. But the differentiator at the SEC level is how well you understand the offense. It's the reason why Fromm was able to come in and start as quickly as he was, because, and Fromm spoke to us about this two Januaries ago, that he was embracing all that, coming in, and even while Jim Chaney's out recruiting and running around doing the stuff you got to do to get ready for signing day, Jake Fromm was sort of on his own, independent study, sort of devouring all the playbook and what he could see on film from opposing defenses. He was getting into all that. It sounds like, based on, once again, the context of what Kirby Smart's saying, that Justin Fields is kind of doing some of that stuff too, which is really, really fun. There's also a potential Easter egg hidden in what Kirby Smart says there. He says, I wanted to say that Fromm and Fields both had command of the huddle, but we're not always huddling. And a lot of Georgia fans are like, wait, what's going on with that? A little more up-tempo this season maybe for the Georgia Bulldogs? And I won't, pretend to read too much into that from Kirby Smart there, but I am reminded of a couple things here. I'm reminded of, if you want to go back to the initial press conference Kirby Smart did, like the very first one he ever did as a Georgia head coach when he was announced. He was very nervous there that day, but a few of the things that he did mention was, in terms of offense, he said, we want to be both pro style, traditional football, and we want to have some up-tempo spread elements as well. He said that. And for the first couple of years in the job at Georgia, I don't know that that's necessarily been the case, especially last year. I think Georgia, for the most part, was a very traditional power football, offensive line dominated team. Maybe in 2018, with the skill set growing, the overall roster deepening, maybe this is a chance to sort of spread the wings a bit and kind of show offensively some of the stuff that Alabama showed while he was working there in the final stages of his career in Tuscaloosa. When Lane Kiffin was offensive coordinator in 2014, 2015, 2016, Alabama did have some of those extra spread, speed-em-up elements, at least a little bit, and maybe Georgia shows off some of that in 2018 as well. It's also kind of ironic that if Georgia does play a little faster here in 2018, I thought that Ralph Russo had a really good piece for the Associated Press the other day, kind of looking at the overall trend of college football actually slowed down offensively a bit in 2017 compared to the previous year. It would be ironic if Georgia's speeding up at a time when a lot of college football maybe, at least based on the numbers, slightly slowing down just a bit. But that's obviously something we'll learn more about when we actually get to see this team on the field for ourselves. One more point to get to here, though. It is not just Kirby Smart who is seemingly saying all the right things right now, and it's not just Jake Fromm and Justin Fields themselves who are sort of performing the right way on practice. The family's kind of getting involved in this a little bit as well. I like this tweet from Pablo Fields. Pablo Fields is the father of Justin Fields, and in contrast to some of the other sort of more controversial quarterback battles going on around college football, it's kind of nice to see the dad of one quarterback with the arm around another. If you're listening, I'm going to have to describe this to you. But if you're watching, let me throw this tweet on the screen from Pablo Fields. He tweets out, great young man, at Jake Fromm, go Dogs. He's got his arm around Jake Fromm there in a really nice picture, although there's a lot of space in between. These are two guys that didn't want to be hugged up, I guess, too much, but a very nice arm-in-arm picture there between Jake Fromm and Justin Fields, and right next to that, Pablo Fields has got the verse from Proverbs that so many football fans and coaches and players use, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And I know that for some people that sort of veers in the direction of being cliche. We've sort of heard that over and over again, but I can promise you that the sentiment expressed by that verse is taken very seriously by a lot of people, this host included here, and I think it's really nice to see Fields kind of buying into that. I think the overall bottom line here is there's no way to know what the future is going to look like here. I'm talking about a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now, how the dynamic of Jake Fromm and Justin Fields together on the same roster at the same time, we don't yet know exactly how that's going to play out. All we can do is evaluate the present, and so far things look pretty good for UGA. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We're presented by Marco's Pizza. We're glad you're here on video live every morning on all the Dog Nation video channels at 10 a.m. Also available on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. Good to be with our friends there in the Classic City. And on demand, at least that's the way we kind of think of the podcast, the on-demand audio way to check out our program every single day, all the different ways, Apple Podcasts, Android Podcasts, the world-famous DogNation.com. We're just really, really glad you have checked out Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza here today. And speaking of Marco's Pizza, they invite you to remember what an MVP really stands for, Marco's Value Pizza. Right now you can get two medium, two topping pizzas for just $6.99 each. That is an everyday price. There's no promo code to remember. There is no special coupon to hold on to. That's just simply the everyday value you get at Marco's. So go to Marco's.com and find the Marco's nearest you and find out how you can take advantage of that special offer. And you'll be very happy that you did. And by the way, every single week I get tweets from folks who tell me just how good of a job Marco's Pizza did of taking care of you. First of all, thank you for sharing those messages. I really appreciate that. And thank you for supporting Marco's Pizza, because Marco's Pizza is a huge, huge fan of Dog Nation and a huge friend and supporter to everyone who kind of congregates under this umbrella each and every day. So we're really appreciative of that. We're going to get Jeff Sintel here in just a moment. A lot to get into with Jeff on today's program. But I want to deal with another subject before we kind of get there. And that's the subject of leadership for UGA. The one thing that we know, and Kirby Smart's been very clear about this over and over again, is that finding new leaders is going to be among the most important issues facing Georgia in 2018. I think this is partially true because the unspoken sentiment there is that Georgia's got plenty of talent. Georgia is, you know, one of the two or three most talented teams in the entire country, I would imagine, just based on raw sort of numeric evaluation of these players coming out of high school. It's difficult to be more talented than Georgia is, but talent alone, I think Kirby Smart would say, is not necessarily enough. You've got to have some of those leaders step up. And we spent a lot of time over the course of the offseason saying, who are the leaders going to be? You know, who's going to take that authority on this season? In some cases, we may predict right. In some cases, maybe we predict wrong. I think I want to give you a couple examples here of guys, maybe not the first names you would have thought of as real vocal step-up leaders for UGA, but if this is indeed the case, it's kind of good news for Georgia. Let me start on offense with a guy like Isaac Nauta, who from time to time, you know, Kirby Smart's publicly challenged, maybe embrace the physical part of the game a bit more, maybe live up to all the potential that he had as a former five-star prospect coming into high school. But it sounds like here moving into Nauta's third year and a year that could be pivotal for Nauta's NFL future, it sounds like Nauta's not only embracing more success on the field, but also the kind of leadership qualities that are needed off the field. If you're a Georgia fan, I think you'll be impressed with what Kirby Smart says about Isaac Nauta here.
Isaac Nauta is a great example of a guy who came in here. I think it helped being at IMG school he went to, where they developed really good leadership. He does not afraid to speak up. You know, he's one of those guys that he doesn't really care what you think. So if he sees it one way and he doesn't think you're doing it right, he'll call you out on it. And he's one of our leaders. He's one of the guys that's really got to step up and play well and lead. And he's answered the bell in that regard. He's a positive leader on that offensive side of the ball.
I think that's really nice. I think, A, because I think Nauta can be a very good player for Georgia this season, and B, because of, you know, he might not necessarily be the first name that sort of jumps to mind as likely leaders for this Georgia offense, but it sounds like, based on what Kirby Smart's saying there, that he may be just as much of a position to do that as anybody. Other side of the ball here for a moment, let's talk about Natris Patrick. Patrick, for very different reasons, you know, he's been somewhat embattled here over the course of the last 12 months. In fact, his status as a player on this team at one point in time was kind of in question, stemming from what happened with him after the SEC championship game back in December, but now it appears that he's full go as a player on this team. And also, the one thing that Kirby Smart says was never in question about Natres Patrick was his ability to be a leader. Now, Kirby says that Patrick's still working on some aspects of being an all-around football player, but leadership is not the issue. Once again, kind of interesting words from Kirby Smart on the subject of leadership when it comes to Natres Patrick. Take a listen to this.
Natres has always been a good leader. The biggest thing with Natres is having stamina himself to perform at an SEC level. His stamina has to improve, meaning he has to be able to play 30 plays in a row. But his leadership has always been a good quality, because he's not afraid to speak up. He's not afraid to challenge guys that aren't playing the right way. But his ability to sustain and do it for 40 plays has been the biggest mark he's got to improve on.
Yeah, so once again, I think that's really interesting from Kirby Smart there. And I think a lot of the story of just how successful Georgia's going to be this season is going to be determined by just how these leaders step up and emerge. And it sounds like in the case of Nate Tress, Patrick, and Isaac Nada, a couple players well on their way to doing just that. Before we get Jeff Sintel, let me remind you of one more thing here. We're getting very close to August 23rd. It's a Thursday night. We're going to be up 400 at the brand new Kroger Marketplace there in Cumming on Bethelview Road for our Dog Nation season kickoff. It's 5550 Bethelview Road in Cumming. We're going to be there from 6 to 8 on August 23rd. We want you to be there, too. This is going to be an awesome way to start the season. We had a great crowd for this event last year at Kroger. Another great crowd expected to join us here on August 23rd. We're going to do giveaways, a special Q&A, and a whole lot of fun. We want you to be a part of it. It's Thursday, August 23rd at 5550 Bethelview Road in Cumming for the Dog Nation season kickoff. Can't wait to see you there. Also, can't wait to roll through the rest of our program here today. A lot of great stuff coming up, including Jeff Sintel right now. It's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Always a fun on Tuesday to do our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. And if you like fun, you will love Marlowe's Tavern. If you want to find out about the fun and the great deals and special offers and special events going on at the Marlowe's nearest you, text the word Marlowe's, that's M-A-R-L-O-W-S, to 24242. You can become a Marlowe's insider today. I know a lot of you were back on the 4th of July were thrilled when Marlowe's gave out those free burgers, red, white, and blue burgers, I think they called them, on the 4th of July. A lot of UGA fans reached out to us about that, getting that great deal from Marlowe's, and that's one of the reasons why you want to be a Marlowe's insider. Text the word Marlowe's to 24242. You can become a Marlowe's insider today. Jeff, welcome to our program. Thanks for being with us, and let me start with this, if you don't mind. I thought you had a very fascinating look at sort of the behind-the-scenes stuff involving Demetrius Robertson's decision to come to UGA, and obviously the family plays a big role here. You had a chance to talk to Robertson's brother, who's been kind of an influential figure in Robertson's life, about a lot of this kind of stuff. For the people who have not read the piece yet, and I hope everyone does, can you give us a little bit of the backstory about kind of how it all comes together and exactly, you know, what it is that the Robertson family sort of sees going on here as Demetrius Robertson gets ready to continue his college career in his home state?
Yeah, guys, good morning. I think the main thing with that story is I've known the Robertson family and those guys probably for about 4 or 5 years now. And it's interesting. Demetrius's high school career also had a situation in his freshman year where he sat out a year. That was due to a transfer. But nonetheless, I think this particular transfer really just speaks to him getting closer to home and making things a lot closer to his backyard and his proximity. Let's face it, he is a big-time college athlete. He's going to school. He was advancing swimmingly toward his degree. I think he had a 3.2 or 3.3, his older brother told me. And it's a very interesting situation here, whereas Demetrius and his twin sister, Shanitris, are the youngest in a family, an immediate family, that includes two older brothers, and these gentlemen are, you know, both heads of their household, and they both have children of their own, and yet the two twins are in college, so it creates a pretty big age gap where a lot of times Carlos has been like a mentor, not just an older brother, but more of a father figure to Demetrius. When Demetrius moved out to Cal, Carlos went out there with him. But there's been some health problems in the family. Carlos told me a story. Well, he just relayed it to me that two of Demetrius's uncles have passed away over the last couple of years, and they both happened within months of one another. And then his mother Mildred, who lives in Greenville, Georgia, she's already 60 years old, and you know she's had her good days and bad days, and that's about as far as I want to advance. Sure. The story about her condition, because it is a personal matter and it is a private family matter. But at the same time, I wanted to see if there was a way we could tell that story to help folks understand why Demetrius, who didn't choose Georgia in May of 2016, now felt about 2 months ago, just to get his heart and his head and his mind in the right place, that he needed to come back home and play for Georgia and then kind of play where Sanford Stadium could be the backyard, and then all the family members could get together and they could watch Demetrius on the college level. play football all together for the first time.
I think a lot of times when people hear the word hardship, they think of it as merely a technicality, sort of gain eligibility. But when you read the words from, you know, Carlos Robertson and you know, hear more of the backstory involving Demetrius there, you understand the true context of what you know, hardship is like when you've got, you know, a family member who's sick, when you are 3,000 miles away. And it sounds like being back in the home state here for Robertson is going to make all of that, if not, you know, completely easier, at least a bit more manageable to sort of take some of the distance out of that situation. And I'm certainly glad for Robertson that he gets a chance to do that. On to a little bit happier subject here. On the football field, I couldn't help but notice another nugget you included in the Demetrius Robertson story, which was that he, quote, made an impact in the scrimmage on Saturday. What are you hearing about that, Jeff, and what can you tell us about how Robertson is sort of fitting into the Georgia offense thus far?
Well, he showed that burst. He showed the ability to get off the line and create separation. I mean, there are reports that you don't have to be a super sleuth like CSI, Dog Nation Daily, and the Daily Llama again, and go looking for things that happened. I mean, Kirby Smart called it a tie, but there was a lot of good things in the scrimmage. Elijah Holyfield flashed. I thought it was interesting that it was sort of an opening, a Xerox of the opening in Oregon, so to speak, where the very first touchdown of the scrimmage, I'm told, was it was a touchdown pass from Justin Fields to Luke Ford, kind of reliving their connection there from their days when they got to know each other as prospects in the summer of 2017 before their senior season. So, you know, Demetrius is definitely not lost his afterburner, so to speak. He's going to be a deep threat for Georgia, but I do think there is a sense of reason there when Kirby Smart points out that not just five stars in that room anymore. It's a very competitive receiver room, and Georgia's working hard to make sure that the very best players rise to the top of that depth chart there.
Jeff, one of the things we talked about before you joined us today was what I thought was kind of a cool tweet from Pablo Fields. That's Justin Fields' father. Arm in arm with Jake Fromm and the great verse from Proverbs about iron sharpening iron, which I know for some people becomes a bit of a football cliche. In this case, though, I think it's probably a pretty meaningful phrase for both the Fields camp and the Fromm camp. And Jeff, I got to tell you, first of all, I like both these guys anyway. I like Jake Fromm. I like Justin Fields, at least what I think I know about them. I like them both. And so far, Jeff, I really like how they are coexisting here together. You know the Fields family very well. You know Mr. Fields very well. What did you think of that picture, and kind of what do you think about the way that at least the public face for both Fromm and Fields right now is everything you'd want it to be, and a stark contrast to what I think is real nasty ugliness going on at a place like Alabama? What do you make of how all this is playing out thus far?
Yeah, Brandon, that's a good point. I think, you know, the quick thing to think there is, you know, there's just a sense of camaraderie there within the Georgia locker room. If anybody's on their Facebook account, they can kind of see some of the pictures coming around where, you know, there's a lot of just mothers and fathers just kind of wrapping their arms and bear hugging all the boys on the team. I think there's a cool picture on social media of Lee Fromm, Jake's mother, giving Isaiah Wilson a big hug. And but to go directly to your question about Pablo Fields and Jake Fromm, I think the best way I can describe it is probably the simple way I tweeted it out or retweeted it, which was really not a quarterback controversy, more like a quarterback fraternity. And yeah, that's a situation where if Justin Fields cannot amp his game up to do something astounding in my book, which would be beat out probably one of the greatest freshman seasons in SEC history. When that guy's naturally going to get a little bit better as well his second year in the offense, I just think Justin behind Jake does things that do add to the Georgia offense in a way that, let's face it, Jake Fromm is not 6'3 and 235 and cannot run, get those yards. He can stick his head down in there on the read option or two and find green grass and some touchdowns, as the Tennessee Volunteers know all about. But I think everybody realizes where they fit into the grand scheme of the offense and the team and the program, and just makes them simply better football players in the long run.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I think I'll say here is there's a, you know, saying in NASCAR that how you raise is how you get raised. In other words, if you're doing a lot of bumping and treading a lot of paint, that's the same way people are going to treat you on the track there as well. And for Georgia football, you know, how Jake Fromm competed with Jacob Eason is how Justin Fields going to compete with him. And I think if you go back to a year ago, Fromm obviously, Jeff, wanted to be the Georgia starter, but there's no example of him being anything other than completely respectful of Eason and simply just a tenacious competitor. No infighting, no sort of backbiting, you know, none of that kind of stuff. And obviously Fromm sets a standard then that Justin Fields is seemingly following now, which once again I think speaks well of all these quarterbacks, Eason included, who by the way is at Washington now. They all handle themselves in a very dignified manner. Everyone wants to be quarterback, but no one seems to be bringing out any kind of ugliness in themselves or their counterpart in the way they're going about it, which once again is just sort of a nice refreshing change of pace from some of the other things you see around college football.
Yeah, I mean, there's a tendency, I know those that have never been on a squad or a team kind of like that, they might think that it feels a little too much like a Disney movie starring Denzel Washington from the 70s about the kumbaya nature of a team. But you really see that all across the Georgia depth chart and all across the Georgia team. You never heard any running backs chirping about carries or playing time, and you never heard any receivers as they were waiting their turn, and the list can go on and on. Think about all the talented offensive linemen Georgia has brought in over the last year or two, and those guys, their path to starting right away wasn't there. Never heard a lot of chirping at all, and I think maybe some of that is controlled by the university with that one voice and one message, and how it's very selective when the freshmen get to speak to the media and everything else like that. But it just to me, you know, the one thing that I think is different about Jacob Eason and Jake Fromm and then JF versus JF here in 2018 is that there's really not a – I mean, Fromm was not going to come in. I know he was going to play last year. You had to get the backup ready. That same stuff applies. And that you can count me in the camp that I do think Jake Fromm would have eventually taken the job away from Jacob Eason through the course of the season just because of the very nature of what we saw last year via the on-field play. But the thing about Fields, though, that is so highly interesting is there is a skill set there that when he comes into the game for Georgia, and he will, then he is going to threaten every level of the defense. It's going to make the safeties think, how much am I going to creep up the run game? Because I know he has a big arm and he can unleash it over the top of my head. And then the backers in the front also has to realize about, okay, who's getting the ball here? Is that one of those five-star running backs, or what is Justin Fields going to do with it? Oh, yeah, he's about 6'3 and 230 and almost as fast, as probably faster than I am, too. He just creates problems for the defense, and it also creates preparation problems for the defense as well. And look at it this way, Brandon. Every segment of practice, every period of practice, that an SEC defensive coordinator spends worrying about the Justin Fields effect on the Georgia offense, that's less time they have to get ready for Jake Fromm, the back shoulder throws, all those many balls that Georgia's going to throw to the tight ends, and who's the new Javon Williams going forward for the Bulldogs as well.
Yeah, well said. Speaking of quarterbacks, tell us a little bit more about Shedeur Sanders, the son of Deion Sanders, the former football legend, both the college and the professional football level. You had a great intel the other day looking a little more closely at Sanders. Here's a part of our Marlowe's Tavern tell-all. Tell us a little more about what we need to know about this 2021 prospect.
Oh, man, Brandon. I mean, I do wish we had the video of the Instagram feed for one Lewis Seen. Because he captured Shedeur in Athens the day that the sequence, the hour when he got the Georgia offer. And I mean, Shedeur was putting on some steps, Brandon, that would remind folks of the Dalai Lama back in his day, back during his college days when he walked onto the dance floor. And I'm sorry, Brandon, but I'm sure somebody's going to whip up a GIF of you on John Travolta's. Our GIF of you on John Travolta's body or whatever. But let me say Shedeur was very happy. Let me say Shedeur was a little bit of Ray Lewis, maybe a little bit of Deion Sanders, maybe a little bit of Icky Woods. He was just really happy he got the Georgia offer. And I think one of the most striking quotes that I garnered from Shedeur when I was talking to him is just kind of the way he said it. I mean, here's a kid from Texas, the son of one of the greatest if they made an all 22 team for the NFL throughout history, I think Deion Sanders would be on that team. and he is sitting there looking at the Georgia program and kind of marveling and saying, man, I can't believe I get an offer to go play there. I can't believe I have a chance to go play there. I can't believe they want me to come play for them, and that can happen at the University of Georgia. Now, that's a paraphrase. That's not word for word, but I found that highly interesting, Brandon. And the other thing I found highly interesting was when Shadur said he's a pocket passer. He models his game after two people. The first of those was Tom Brady, everyone knows is the GOAT. But the second one was one Justin Fields. And when I kind of just asked him a follow-up about how Justin's only like 3-4 years older than you. How do you – where does that come from? And Shadur told me he would be watching Justin Fields' highlights week to week after every game last year as a true freshman who led his team to the state championship in Texas. He was watching Justin Fields' senior year play out on highlight packages from halfway across the country and learning and picking and saying, I like that part of his game. Let me take a little bit of that. Let me have a little big dose of Brady right here. Let me get another dollop of Fields here. And that's the player he wants to become.
All right, a couple quick issues before we let you go. Let me start with this. We now know more of the details about the DJ Daniel commitment announcement this week. This is a junior college defensive back from down there at Georgia Military College. It's a top three that includes the University of Georgia. We'll find out later on this week what Daniel's choice is, but we can say for sure a little bit more about how that announcement's going to be revealed. Jeff, what can you tell us about the DJ Daniel situation here?
Yeah, there was some specifics that came together, I guess, sometime yesterday. DJ Daniel will make his decision. It will be on campus at Georgia Military College in Milledgeville on Thursday. That would be August 16th, as he had previously tweeted out. The final three of Kentucky, Georgia, South Carolina, and that ceremony is scheduled to take place at 2 p.m. So everybody out there can no doubt count on Dog Nation being there live and on site to bring the decision from DJ Daniel. Pretty rare thing for Georgia to be in the running for a junior college cornerback. Not necessarily the modus operandi for the Bulldogs and their recruiting scope, especially at the defensive back position under Kirby Smart. But, hey, everybody wants to know when's the next time fans can perk their ears up and start thinking about a potential commit. Well, there's a chance for Georgia to still win that dogfight in the end with Kentucky and South Carolina for the nation's number two junior college quarterback.
All right, quick final question here, and I don't want to be careful how I ask this as part of our Marlowe Stavern tell-all because I don't want to give any kind of publicity to nonsense. But, Jeff, isn't it amazing just how much a lot of rival fan bases seem to have really gotten their ire up about the Georgia recruiting success here? You see a lot more seemingly, you know, message board fodder negative towards UGA than you saw before. A real rash of fake tweets, you know, fake social media posts, all designed to sort of disparage UGA. I mean, it seems like in about 5 seconds, Jeff, Georgia went from being something of a, I don't want necessarily to say lovable loser, but kind of a program that wasn't necessarily among the most hated in college football, to now it's almost like Georgia's the evil empire without having yet won the national championship, because I don't know that there's any program that looks like public enemy number one on the recruiting trail more so than Georgia looks like under Kirby Smart right now. And all of this seems to have happened over the span of about 90 seconds. It is amazing how quickly Kirby Smart has made this program the ultimate villain when it comes to recruiting, is it not?
Well, Brandon, to me it kind of mirrors, I was in Alabama, I was a sports reporter for the Birmingham News and AL.com during the first several, you know, crucible years, I guess, the cradle years, I guess, for Alabama football under Nick Saban. And they quickly went from a program that was, let's check the records here. They went from a program that I think lost to a directional school from Louisiana his first year. The second year, they play for the SEC title and lose to Tebow. The third year, I believe they break through and win it all. And by and large, along the way, they're stacking up number one rated recruiting classes as things go forward. It just seems to me like it's a clear Xerox of what happened in Tuscaloosa without the results that came in year three yet. And to me, listen, Georgia recruited like gangbusters, and Georgia's been recruiting like a supernova for probably at least since last November of 2017. That the recruiting has just went bonkers since then over the last, you know, maybe 9 to 12 months. And nobody worried about those things when Georgia was coming off an 8-5 season or hadn't done things like won an SEC title or won a Rose Bowl, beaten a Heisman Trophy winner, and taking those Crimson Tide to the distance in overtime. But now, when you combine all that recruiting with the legitimacy this is a different Georgia than the ones in years past, kind of like the way Clemson shed the label of Clemsoning at the same time, I just think more of this stuff comes up because more people perceive Georgia as a real threat on the college football landscape compared to what they were doing. Because they've been doing this, Brandon, probably for the last year and a half now, recruiting like basically only one other program in the country. And I think you just see the more successes combined with the on-field reputation, I think that reputation is only going to grow where Georgia is going to be compared to the likes of Emperor Palpatine and Darth Vader and like things of that nature.
Become a Marlowe's insider by texting the word Marlowe's, that's M-A-R-L-O-W-S, no apostrophe, to 24242. Find out about special offers and big events taking place at the Marlowe's nearest you, including a lot of Dog Nation events coming up throughout this college football season. We cannot wait to be with you for that. Jeff, thanks for being with us here today. It's part of our Marlowe's Tavern Tell All. We'll look forward to reading a whole bunch more from you at DogNation.com and talk to you again very soon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
All right, so let's do our SEC Through here. And as we do that, I want to remind you that coming up tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern time, the return of Before the Hedges presented by Kroger as we talk a lot of recruiting with Jeff Sintel tomorrow, including a few surprises in the program tomorrow. So make sure you check that out on the Dog Nation video channels on a podcast also coming up for you as well. It's Before the Hedges presented by Kroger. Really, really excited about that tomorrow at 3 p.m. Eastern time. For now, though, let's turn our attention to what's happening around the SEC here. And let me start with something that Paul Feinbaum had to say. Now, I wasn't listening when Feinbaum said this, but Saturday Down South had a story about Feinbaum discussing the current situation with the Alabama quarterbacks, and I think this is actually pretty fascinating here. According to Feinbaum, Jalen Hurts' issues may extend beyond trying to be the starting quarterback in comparison to Tua Tagovailoa. It may go a little deeper than that. In fact, if you're listening, let me read this quote to you. If you're watching, I'm going to show you on the screen here, Saturday Down South's quote from Paul Feinbaum here when it comes to this. He says, based on what I've heard, select boosters do get to go to the practices and are not allowed to tweet or text or tell anyone what they said, although several have told me what they said. Tua is going to be the starter. One person indicated to me right now there is a competition for backup. Now, what that seems to mean there from Paul Feinbaum is that right now Jalen Hurts is competing with the other 2017 signing at quarterback, Mac Jones. Jones came in the same year that Tua Tagovailoa did, to be the number two quarterback at Alabama. And the chances of Jalen Hurts even being the starter at all, that ship has completely sailed. Now, here's what I believe I know. There is no booster at Alabama qualified to say that Jalen Hurts is in danger of dropping the number three quarterback. He may be at the, or she may be at the scrimmage, and they may see, you know, what they see with their own eyes, Hurts getting outplayed with Mac Jones. But it would seem to me that if Feinbaum is going with that, he might be getting that from something else other than just an Alabama fan. That's going to be my assumption there on that point, which sort of plays back into what I've suggested before of the really weird dynamic with Alabama when it comes to a Jalen Hurts. That if you're Hurts, you sort of understand where he kind of comes from in terms of, I'm not being treated the way that I want to be treated. Now, I've been very clear over the course of the last year, I don't think that Jalen Hurts is a very good quarterback, at least in comparison to top-flight players like Tua Tagovailoa. But, man, it seems like he is really getting the cold shoulder from Alabama right now, and that is not a good look to watch play out. Pretty fascinating stuff there on that front. Let me talk a little recruiting here just for a moment. And a name that you may be familiar with is Ishmael Supcher. He is the one of the top defensive linemen in the entire country. He's from Louisiana, and obviously Georgia's in on most elite recruits, not really in on Supcher because of the fact that geographically he's just kind of a long way away. Now, Georgia's pulled a couple of young men from Louisiana, but Supcher not really on the dog's radar thus far, but LSU is certainly doing everything it can to get Supcher in the mix here, probably battling Alabama for his services. And LSU, an example of them pulling out all stops here, is also offering Sopcher's brother, who's a junior college player. He tweets this out. I want to show you this tweet if you're watching the show. It's Rodney Sopcher, his name. He's a junior college defensive lineman. He says, I'm blessed to receive my first offer from Louisiana State University. Now, listen, on this program, we celebrate all kids who get a chance to play a major college football. We're glad for that opportunity. But if you're LSU, and this is what you have to do, I mean, the young man said it himself. This is his first offer. He's not gotten offers anywhere else. You don't think anybody else had the idea of, hey, maybe we could offer Ishmael Sopcich's brother if we think that it gives us a chance to bring in Ishmael Sopcich? The fact that no one else has chosen to do that, I think maybe speaks to the evaluation of the player here just for a moment, and it speaks to the desperate way in which that Ed Orgeron's kind of gone about his recruiting business here. It is really a pretty odd look here. The same thing went on last year. Once again, I'm not going to pick on players, and I'm not, you know, looking to say anything negative about any future college football player. But you know, LSU took the commitment of Adam Anderson in part. The conventional wisdom is because they also took Jaquan Griffin's commitment and Jamarcus Chapman's commitment. Players that didn't have the big time offers other places, but that's what LSU was willing to do to get Adam Anderson a year ago. Eventually signs with Georgia. LSU was apparently willing to trade three scholarships for one elite player. Maybe now doing the same thing again with two scholarships for an elite player and Ishmael Sopcich. Boy, it's really weird to see how desperate LSU has seemingly become on the recruiting trail here. Not a great look for the Tigers there. Kind of an interesting thing coming out of South Carolina, where Will Muschamp, and we talked about this briefly yesterday, has once again seemingly defended DJ Durkin, kind of on the aftermath of what he said the other day when he really hammered ESPN's use of anonymous sources. You know, the follow-up statement from Will Muschamp is, you know, basically suggesting that he finds it impossible to believe some of the things that have been reported about DJ Durkin here. This is either a very bold and courageous move on Muschamp's part, or really kind of a weird thing to involve himself in a controversy at a school many hundreds of miles from where he is, given the fact that he's got his own issues on the field to take care of and worry about there at South Carolina. Although, you know, maybe Muschamp just feels very strongly about this story. This will be certainly one to keep watching. And on a different note, kind of away from the SEC here, but certainly an issue of interest to UGA fans, former Georgia offensive coordinator and great former Georgia quarterback Mike Bobo, now the head coach of Colorado State, dealing with a bit of a medical scare. He released a statement here, and I'll show you the statement, that he was dealing with some numbness in his feet, and so much so that he has been kind of forced to step away from practice and sort of take care of some of this, deal with some of this stuff. It's obviously a scare. As of right now, we don't know a ton of what's going on, but he certainly sends out some appreciation for the care, the support, and I know prayers as well there for Mike Bobo. So kind of a scary situation for Bobo. Obviously, here on Dog Nation Daily, we're fans of the former Georgia offensive coordinator, and we do send a lot of prayers his way. We're very concerned to hear a positive health update on Mike Bobo here really soon. For now, we'll make that your SEC through. And of course, as we continue here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Marco's Pizza, our look at the way that Georgia is going to stay on top of the division once again for 2018. One of the guys that plays a pivotal role in that is Georgia safety J.R. Reed. He's a guy that really flashed some brilliance in 2017. We expect more of that in the upcoming year, and let's take a closer look at him right now.
Georgia's own credit union presents Own the East, and a look at the names to know as Georgia tries to stay on top of the division once again for 2018. Hello, everybody. I'm Brandon Adams, along with Dog Nation's Chip Towers. Chip, you're a good writer. You love good stories, and I don't know that this Georgia team has a better story than the tale of J.R. Reed, a transfer from Tulsa. Many of us knew very little about him, and yet he's turned out to be one of Georgia's top defensive players. How much fun is this guy to cover?
Well, he's a fantastic guy to cover, and that goes beyond what he's doing on the football field, which is considerable. He became one of Georgia's best playmakers in the back third last season. A lot of big turnovers, a lot of big plays, interceptions, the fumble return against Florida. But the main thing is he's become not only a leader on the field, but a leader off the field. Mel Tucker and Kirby Smart are looking at JR, a transfer from Tulsa, in stepping up in the leadership side of things, and he has. He's a great guy to talk to, says all the right things off the field and in post-game interviews. And the amazing thing is when you think back on it, you know, the narrative on this guy was he was a throw-in because he's the cousin of D'Angelo Gibbs to get him here. And here we are, 2018 preseason. We still don't know exactly what's going to happen with D'Angelo Gibbs. But we do know what's going to happen with J.R. Reed. He's going to be the starting strong safety for Georgia for a second straight season.
And his potential impact can't be overstated. There is no more Dominic Sanders. There is no Aaron Davis anymore. Both those guys played a lot of football for UGA. Some of the things that they did, obviously J.R. Reed's going to be asked to do more of here this season.
Yeah, and that's going to be real interesting to see if he takes over that role that Dominic Sanders handled, which goes beyond making plays in the last third. Dominic Sanders the last 3 years has been the guy making the calls in the back in the secondary, saying this is your guy, this is my guy, and that role that goes to J.R. Reed this year, and quite frankly, none of us know how well he'll do it. We'll see.
Reed shows up as a preseason All-SEC name on some of the lists, and he could be a big reason why Georgia could own the East here in 2018.
Own the East is brought to you by Georgia's Own Credit Union and Georgia's Own Visa Signature Card, which gives 1.25 points for each dollar charge and can be redeemed for cash back, gift cards, travel, merchandise, and more. Check out georgiazone.org for more details.
We were taking some video comments a little earlier on our broadcast, and someone mentioned to me that I was too obsessed with star ratings and kind of, you know, accolades coming into high school, and that's a criticism that's probably fair from time to time. And an example of how that can be a really incorrect evaluation is involving J.R. Reed. As I've explained many times before, J.R. Reed was not a player I expected much from at all when he first came to Georgia. It's been sort of said over and over again. He was sort of most famous for being D'Angelo Gibbs' cousin. And yet what we find out is that Reed, in his own right, is an exceptional player. When you think about those what you hope are rock-solid starters for Georgia this season. Kirby Smart's been very clear about this. There are not a lot of starting jobs that are sort of already kind of locked down. One of the ones that we assume is locked down is that safety position manned by J.R. Reed. He has quickly become a very important player for Georgia. If the Dogs do stay on top of the division once again for 2018, you expect J.R. Reed to play a huge role in that success for the Dogs. All right, let's get ready to wrap up here on our program today. Of course, we believe around these parts that a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater. And what is it, 74 days from right now, Georgia goes back to Jacksonville and beats those lousy, stinking Gators once again. We cannot wait to do that. We love doing the Gatorator Countdown right here on a Dog Nation Daily presented by Marco's Pizza, and are really excited to do that every single day. Let me also close the show with this here real quick. I got some interesting responses on Twitter and in various comments about yesterday's topic involving Demetrius Robertson that you know, I try to make the case that the Robertson impact was even more significant than some Georgia fans gave it credit for. I got some pushback on that, some Dog fans saying, no, it's actually less significant than you think it is. But upon reading the feedback and sort of, you know, thinking back on my own thoughts here, I'm going to stick with this. That elite receiver has been a big part of national championship offenses. I think that Robertson's the best chance of being that for UGA here in 2018. I think this is big for the Dogs. We'll see you tomorrow.